River Marlowe, we take the Bible very seriously, which means we want to read it in ways that it's Christ-forming and life-giving for us and others. And in order to read the Bible well, we need to understand its big themes and not just read it as a collection of verses to pick and choose from. Understanding the Bible's big themes will help us read it with the grain of what its authors intended. Now, I'm not at all a practical person, as Anthea will tell you, but I'm told that you get much better results and you avoid damage when you work wood along with its grain. Yeah, does that make sense? Any carpenters here? And I think that's true for how we read and interpret the Bible. Yeah, when we read with the grain, we get better results, interpretation, and we avoid damaging ways to read it. And it also helps us to move away from proof texting and quoting Bible verses irrespective of their context. And we're going to start this morning with surely the biggest theme of all, and that's the theme of who God is. And, of course, that's a huge theme. Okay, so this is going to be something of an overview. But my hope is that this will set up the rest of the next few weeks in a really helpful way for us. But before we do that, just a couple of practical things. Ian's done one of them, so he showed you the Zach Lambert book. Right, there's lots of books out there, great books, about how to read the Bible well. But a couple that Anthony and I really recommend. So there was Zach Lambert's book, Better Ways to Read the Bible, but also Stephen Bernhope, who you remember did some sessions for us on discerning inclusion. His latest book, Reading the Bible with His Writers, is very, very good. We've got a few copies that we brought in our library. I've actually used this as a bit of a check on my own notes. So I would really recommend get hold of that book. You'll find that very helpful. The other thing is there are notes. If you notice that came out, there's a hard copy here. But every week you're going to get some notes and it will build up. So you're going to get a whole set of notes, probably about 20 pages worth over the next 9 weeks. But they're there to help you do your own private study. But just as importantly, they are meant to be or help us to have healthy conversations. Okay? So we want you to go away and talk about these notes, discuss what you think. You might not agree with everything. You might find some of it not so helpful, but have a good conversation. Finally, third little practical thing is, can I suggest that if you haven't brought a new Bible in the last 10 years or so, then you can seriously consider buying a new one. Okay, Bible translations are getting better all the time. Okay, so a more latest edition will be more accurate. And because our language, all languages, keep developing, then a more up-to-date edition will reflect language now, not language 10 or 20 or 30 years ago. Okay, so think about that. And if you do decide to buy a new Bible, how about changing to a different version? Okay, our brains, or certainly my brain, does get very lazy. So when I read the same thing over and over again, I just stop really understanding it. So if we get a different version, it can help freshen up just the way that we're approaching the text. And the final thing is, if you do decide to make that step, think about getting a Bible with some good study notes. By good, I mean one that will give you different credible views on issues around context and translation and interpretation. So I'm at the minute using this one here, SBL Study Bible, Society of Biblical Literature. It's really, really good. It's based on the updated version of the NRSV, and it's got great notes, great introductions to books. It's just very, very helpful if you just want to understand stuff more. Okay, practical intro over. Let's get on to the subject. The God who is real, or God is reality. The question of God's existence is as important today as it's ever been. Okay, there's a recent bit of non-partisan research that reckoned that 75.8% of the world's population believe in God in some way, shape or form. Okay, that's 6.2 billion of the 8.2 billion people on our planet. It means that despite how we feel sometimes, plenty of the people that we interact with every day will be okay with the idea of God. Yeah? 76% of the world is. The issue is rather the exact idea of God that they carry around with them. And I've got a little video clip that hopefully Tim's lined up that will just help us to understand this point a little bit better. Tim.
Something comes into everybody's head when we hear the word God. An image, a concept, a sensation.
Even though the video rightly ends by saying the Christian God is not like this, but is something else, many Christians, it seems to me, seem to hold some of those views of God that at times come very, very close. But we are the people, aren't we, who claim not only to believe that God is real, but to claim to know what God is like, and to claim to have a meaningful relationship with God. So therefore, surely it's on us to help people break free from the unhelpful, even harmful baggage they carry, or more likely has been loaded onto them about how they understand God. You see, how we make sense of and represent God will go a long way to influencing how the people we know and live with will start to make sense of God too. And going back to that research, it suggests that our main challenge isn't so much trying to prove God exists in the abstract. Most people believe that in some way or form already. And those that don't, I think trying to rationalise God's existence isn't actually very helpful. Rather, it's about modelling for people what a healthy relationship with God looks like and that it's worth taking seriously. That is what I believe, why we're here, to do those things well. But where to start? Well, a very good place to start is where the Bible starts with its answer to the question that the video posed of the something else that is God. And we see it right at the start in Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, when God created, or more literally, when God began to create, tells us that there is a starting point to everything that exists, and that starting point is God. It's the Christian faith's answer to the question of how we get something from nothing that isn't random chance. And Hebrews 11:3 reflects on it in this way, and this is important. By faith, we understand that the entire universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was made from things that are not visible. It's by faith. So the Genesis 1 and 2 account of creation, they weren't written to be scientific explanations, and they weren't written to stand up to modern ideas about historicity. They're theology. Whenever you think it was written, and whoever wrote Genesis 1 and 2, it was intended as life-giving theology to give meaning, purpose, and hope to exiled Israel, whether that was either in Egypt or in Babylon, because they faced having their understanding of God erased by their oppressors, who thought that because they'd won, their gods were superior. That's the context. And it's not so far from today, is it? Especially when power is involved, the way that we outwork the views we hold about God have a real impact on people's lives. And so it's important to always remember when we read the Bible that it starts with the theological claim that all existence is a product of God's creative activity, which is inherently good, and therefore life has meaning and purpose for all creation. And as Christians, we've taken this account as the foundation for understanding God and God in relation to the world that we live in. As Paul puts it so poetically in Acts 17:28, in him we live and move and have our being. For Christians, the God who is at the centre of and involved in everything that is and in everything that there will ever be. Which means, of course, the very fact that we exist becomes the very first witness to the reality of the God who is. We are here because God is. But Genesis 1 gives us another important piece of Christian theology about the God who is. And Isaiah reflects on it this way. For I am God, and there is no other. I am God, and there is no one like me. As the video said, God is indeed something else, because God is the one and only uncreated creator. Which means that along with all of life, we exist as a result of and as a reflection of what unique God is like. And this makes our next question about realizing what God is actually like a very, very important one. And it's why we take the Bible very seriously, because the Bible is a time-tested, inspired witness to God's self-revelation, written by multiple authors using lots of different literary styles over a period of about 1,000 years. And its diversity of witness is its great strength, because it shows us not just that God exists, but it shows us what God is really like and how God relates to us in the world. And because God is always being revealed in creation. Which means that our issue is really one of awareness. It's an issue of realizing God's presence is with us and realizing what God is really like. And this has always been an issue for humans. Okay, we've always struggled with this question. And crucially, the Bible picks up on this very early on in the second book of the Old Testament, in Exodus 3:11-14. But Moses protested to God, "Who am I to appear before Pharaoh? Who am I to lead the people of Israel out of Egypt?" God answered, "I will be with you. And this is your sign that I am the one who has sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God at this very mountain." But Moses protested, "If I go to the people of Israel and tell them, 'The God of your ancestors has sent me to you,' they will ask me, 'What is your name?' Then what shall I tell them?" God replied to Moses, "I am who I am. Say this to the people of Israel, 'I am has sent me to you.'" Now, I think we can all sympathize, can't we, with Moses here, yeah? I mean, do you think God's answer there is entirely satisfactory? It's like, God has been revealed to Moses, and he's even got an ancestral reference point for God. But what on earth does he say to his friends and neighbors back home to convince them? Like, the God who just is that enough to get them on board? And aren't we in the same boat? We want our friends and family, neighbours and work colleagues to get to know what God is really like. But where do we start? Saying God just is isn't going to cut it, is it? Well, I think the place to start, or a good place to start, is the place that Moses actually got to, which is to find out what God is like so that he could show the people what God is like. And this is the reason Moses eventually pushes God for a fuller answer to his question. And he asks God, "Show me your ways. God, what are you really like? I need to know." And God's answer in Exodus 34:6-7 is one of the Bible's most important texts. And therefore, not surprisingly, it is the most cross-referenced text in the entire Old Testament. In fact, if you want to read the Bible well, you need to understand and read this text well. It's as simple as that. It's so important. And it says this: a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness, keeping steadfast love for the thousandth generation, forgiving iniquity and transgression and sin, yet by no means clearing the guilty, but visiting the iniquity of the parents upon the children and the children's children to the third and fourth generation. Even though this is God clearly, directly speaking, how this has been interpreted has been and remains a great source of theological tension for Christians. And it's because, as Ian mentioned in Zach Lambert's book, we all have a favourite lens that dictates our primary view of God. And so we find it hard to look through others. You know, like the eye test, I have to have a review here now, and where most of the time it's all blurry, isn't it? Until you get that one lens that's right, and you suddenly get clear vision. And so for some of us, our primary lens for understanding God is love that leads to mercy, forgiveness, and faithfulness. After all, that's what Exodus 34, 6 and 7 says. For others, our primary lens for understanding God is through God's judging of the wrongdoing of fallen and sinful humanity. After all, that's what Exodus 34, 6 and 7 says. So which one is it? Which one is more important? How do we make sense of the obvious tension in this key passage of the Bible? Well, I think we start by remembering what I said earlier, that thankfully God is not like us. God is something else. We find it incredibly difficult to hold those things in healthy tension. Let's be honest. We either tend to be one or the other. But God is inherently all of these characteristics all of the time. So yes, God is always love, and that love shows mercy and forgiveness. But it is a love that cannot allow evil and its consequences to persist. And so it's a love that will judge wrongdoing and bring justice. But God's judgment is not an end in itself, and it is never the end of the story. Because God is a good and loving judge, God's justice is always restorative and is always working towards putting things right. That is a big theme of the Bible. And so I think, as hard as it can sometimes be, I believe when we seek to be loving people who will always work to put things right, we are modelling something really important of what God is like. Sometimes that kind of love can be tough. It can lead us to have to make hard choices. But they should always be choices that work towards restoration, because that's what God does. That's who God is. Okay, leaves us one more big question for this week, which is, how do we have an appropriate relationship with the God who is? Now, in the Old Testament, especially early on, God is sometimes described as taking bodily form. So, for example, in Genesis 3:8, where God is walking in the garden. And, of course, this finds its ultimate expression in Jesus, God revealed in human flesh. However, for the most part, the Bible describes God as spirit. So, Psalm 139:7, for example, where can I go from your spirit? Therefore, as Christians, we believe that God is everywhere at the same time and can be encountered constantly without end. Which all sounds great, but it raises a big question about how we can have a relationship with God, who is spirit, who we cannot see, who we cannot physically touch, and who we just can't pick up our phone to and message or FaceTime. Because that's how we do relationships, isn't it? And it's one of the biggest struggles I think people have with the idea of a relationship with God. how do you have a relationship with an unseen spirit? And as believers, there are times, if we're honest, when we don't find it easy to relate to God through the Bible or through worship and prayer. God seemingly silent and distant is a struggle we all face at times. And maybe some of us are facing that struggle right now. I think part of the problem is, in Western Christianity at least, we've got so overly occupied with our individual relationship with God that it can end up, certainly can do for me at times, feel we can be very stressful when we feel our relationship with God is not working. And then we look around at everybody else and we think how wonderful and close to God they are. Yeah? Now, of course, the Bible teaches us that a personal relationship with God is important, but it's also clear that we are never just individuals relating to God. We are created to be a community relating to God with others. So back to Genesis, back to the start, in verses 26 and 27, very well-known verses, we are told that all humans are made in the image and likeness of God. First, this means that there is something of God in every human being. And so, however incomplete it might be, when we relate to another person, we are always encountering God in some way. Second, it means that God works mostly in the world through people. Now, I know we all like the idea that God will just do stuff out of nothing with minimal effort on our part. And sometimes, yes, absolutely, I believe God does work through the miraculous and the unseen. However, we are created in the image and likeness of God precisely so we can get things done on God's behalf. And so I think it means that when we are having issues hearing from God or seeing God at work, then a good place to start is to spend time with other people. Go listen to their experiences. Go work with someone else. Go and learn from another person. This is the reason that we're in a faith community of relationships together. But I think that principle can also and should also extend to all of our relationships. You see, from God's perspective, all people are inherently sacred. So if we want people to take having a relationship with God seriously, then first and foremost, we should treat them and value them as God sees them. Sadly, today, there's a worrying increase in our world of dehumanization, and it's coming in many forms. And tragically, even some Christians seem to be being drawn into this destructive mode of viewing and treating people. But I really would like to think that with our values, we can commit to being a church community who will stand up for the value and dignity of every human being, which of course is what Jesus did. Jesus taught and showed us that if we can't love other humans made in God's image, who we can see and we can physically help, then how can we claim to love God who we can't see? That's what Jesus taught us. Okay, we're nearly done. But there's one more very important way the Bible shows us how to relate to God who is spirit. John 14:26 says this, "The Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name," that's Jesus, "will teach you everything." So God, that God is Father, Son, and Spirit in eternal relationship is the unique essence of the Christian understanding of God. And in this verse, we get a glimpse of the inner life of God being revealed just enough to show us how we can relate to God who is spirit. No one knows God more closely than the Spirit of God in Jesus, because they're in eternal relationship. Which means that through our relationship with Jesus, we have a spirit-to-spirit relationship with God. Yeah? The Spirit in us is in relationship with God, the Spirit. And because the Spirit always reveals God, when we follow Christ and reach out to people, God is always being revealed. And I will end with this, because I think we have to believe that this means that the Spirit of God in Jesus that we carry makes a difference in the world. I think we have to believe that. And we have to believe that it helps us to show people what God is really like in the face of the many harmful representations of God that exist in our world today. And surely for us, that's every motivation to want to get to know God better and to represent God well. And that's our first false foundation of God revealed through the Bible.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you.